This is the Anderson Files on PodClip. The Anderson Files is a look at commerce, investment, economics, and retirement issues that affect each and every one of you. Your host is Mike Anderson, Executive Vice President, Retirement Services, and partner of Finestone Partners. Finestone Partners is an independent firm with securities offered through Four Point Capital. And now your host, Mike Anderson.
Environmental, social, and governance investing, what's called ESG. What is it and how is it entering the U.S. investment market? Joining me today to discuss ESG investing is Bill Slimbaugh, a managing director for retirement strategies at Natixis Investment Managers, U.S. distribution. He covers all retirement distribution in the Northeast and manages the retirement strategies sales team nationally. He has over 25 years of experience in the industry and has experience in retirement plan design, fund selection, and participant education. Bill, welcome. Good morning.
Good morning, Mike. Thank you for having me. Glad to be here.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you today. And to get started, from your experience, What are we seeing as far as ESG interest and implementation in the U.S. investment marketplace?
That's a good question, and I think it's no question about it. There's an awful lot of attention being paid to this topic, and that leads me to believe it's definitely a trend and not a fad. And you cannot open an industry publication or click on an investment website without seeing something about ESG. So anecdotally, there clearly is some attention being paid to this concept. More quantitatively, and I think this is what makes it very real for a lot of people, is the number of product choices available to investors that have ESG as a mandate has really exploded. If you look back in 2021, there were over 120 new funds launched that had sustainability as part of their mandate. And additionally, 25, give or take, other funds that have been in the marketplace change their mandate to include sustainable factors. So that's about 150 new product launches last year, and that's followed up on a year where there were about 70 in 2020. So as we stand right now, there are over 530 sustainable funds in the marketplace in the U.S., which is up 36% from a year ago. And more importantly, in 2021, about $70 billion of net inflows of investment dollars in the U.S. went into sustainable funds. So these numbers are large, the numbers are real, and it makes me think that ESG is here to stay as a trend.
And Bill, for when you're referring to funds, are these in the form of mutual funds or private placements, ETFs? Is it a combination of how ESG strategies are being packaged and offered to the public?
It's a combination. So the numbers I referenced are registered investment products. So those will include mutual funds, ETFs, some separately managed accounts. This doesn't even count all the private placement and private investment products out there. So these are registered numbers I'm referring to.
I see. And why do you think this is happening? Why now?
Well, I think the best answer to that is that investment companies in the U.S. are very quick to respond to and to capitalize on investor demand. And we've done a lot of survey work around this topic, and the demand is clearly there. So 81% of folks that we surveyed want their investments to match their personal values. And as we all know, ESG values, environmental, social, and governance values, are trending very strong right now and resonating with a lot of people, especially younger people coming into the workforce, into the marketplace. I think another reason is because of the political football that this has become, there's a lot of media attention paid to this topic. And like we all know, media attention is driven from demand in the marketplace. So we're seeing a couple different factors producing all these new choices people have to choose from.
I see. And from the last couple of years, how is the industry measuring this increased demand? Is it just by fund purchases, or people asking for these types of funds, companies, institutions? How is the industry picking up on the want and the need?
A couple of different reasons. Through survey work that I just referenced, I think that's pretty well read and well consumed by investment companies. Again, they're looking to launch products to capitalize on demand because everybody's in this business to raise money to manage. And additionally, we're hearing demand from our existing clients. ESG is being demanded not from just individuals, but from institutionals and institutions that represent individuals.
I see. And you know, as far as a definition of ESG and how that definition has evolved, you know, what it means today as what it meant, let's say 5 years ago, 10 years ago, or you know, a generation of time ago, how has this evolved?
That's a good question. And I think evolve is a good word. With this tremendous growth in options comes evolution. And oftentimes with this evolution becomes confusion. So if you look right now, there are several different investment philosophies in the marketplace, maybe more than several, that are all labeled ESG or used synonymously with the term ESG or used synonymously with each other. And I think you have to break them down into two different categories and discuss the evolution that's happened between those two categories. The first one would be values-based investing. And the second one would be financially material factors. And let's break those down. So values-based factors would be something that you and I may have grown up on in this industry, Mike, where if someone 25 years ago wanted a social responsible fund, they were out there, they were in the marketplace, and those are really values-driven. And another word for them would be exclusionary or negative screening. So if we're going to open a social responsible fund, before we invested a dollar, we would make a list of things that we wanted to exclude from ownership. And traditionally, it might be things like guns, tobacco, alcohol, defense contractors, things along that line that we would deem disagreeable to own. So before we invested a dollar, we would exclude the things that we did not want to purchase. So that negative screening or exclusionary was very popular and still is very popular, but it puts a values-based emphasis versus a financial-first emphasis. Another example of value space would be impact investing, which has gained tremendously in popularity. And impact investing says, before we invest, we want to have our money facilitate some type of change. And it's usually environmental or social. For example, we want to save the rainforest, clean the oceans, whatever the case may be, all admirable. But again, subordinating that financial performance of the investment for something else that's in a value system that's non-financial in nature. So if you contrast the values based of negative screening, social responsible, or impact with financially material factors, you get a difference which is subtle. It may appeal to the same group of people and over the same time, and the end result may be the same, but the approach is different. I'll give you an example of financially material. ESG integration is increasing in popularity, and what this says is, in addition to all the fundamental investment research that's done on a particular security, they're integrating factors which traditionally would be environmental, social, or governance to get a better picture of that company. An example I always use is the coffee shop. Whether it's my neighborhood coffee shop down the street that I visit every weekend or a multinational global company that we all know, and you can pick them, there are several out there. Think about those businesses. If we're going to take an ownership stake in one of those businesses, we need to understand all the financial components of that business. But if we're not paying attention to things like land degradation or water scarcity, we may not be getting the full picture. Now, land degradation and water scarcity are traditionally environmental issues, but they apply to the financial materiality of this company. For example, if my neighborhood coffee roaster and distributor knows that down the road he's going to have to pay 50% more for coffee beans because of land degradation or water scarcity, that's going to impact his business. The same thing, if you think about what all his business does, they import beans from farmers, roast them, and run clean water through them. If clean water is more expensive 10 years down the road, that's going to affect his business financially. So integrating ESG factors like water scarcity and land degradation give us a better financial picture of unforeseen risks or potential opportunities of those companies. So if you take a look at values-based versus financially material factors, again, the results may be very similar. They're going to appeal to the same people, but you take a materially different step in arriving at those positions.
And Bill, has from what you're describing, it seems that the definition has expanded over time, where it started fairly finite and now it's expanded to reflect more aspects of society?
Yes, and I think it's also within that expansion has come some nuance that if taken just at a broad brush range may seem very similar, but this really becomes tricky when you get into things like ERISA-governed corporate retirement plans, which have some very significant factors we have to consider. So again, while the differences may appear to be slight, they could be problematic if not understood fully.
ESG investing. I'm talking with Bill Slimbaugh of Natixis. This is the Anderson Files on podclips.io. Bill, to continue, you know, we've seen this type of demand and adoption in different parts of the marketplace over the last more recent years, but have we seen it translate into the workplace retirement plan?
I would say we've seen the demand translate, Mike, but we have not seen implementation nearly to the degree that we have outside of the workplace. I mentioned a few minutes ago some of the survey work we've done that said 81% of folks want their investments to match their values, and that doesn't really tell us much because people have different values. But more importantly, if we take a look at the next incoming wave of the financial, and it's not next, they're here, is the quote-unquote millennial generation. And 7 out of 10 millennials would either start contributing or increase their contribution to their workplace retirement plan if they were offered ESG options. And that's pretty significant. 7 out of 10 would start contributing for the first time or increase their contribution. Yet if you look at the current retirement plan marketplace in the U.S., fewer than 15% of plans offer an ESG option, and less than 2% of the assets in the U.S. retirement plan market sit in ESG funds. So while the demand is there, the implementation has not picked up to the degree that we think it will.
And at least to date, this kind of lag in implementation, why do you think that's happening? Is it simply advisors, sponsors not taking the initiative or to raise the awareness? Why do you think that, at least how it's unfolded so far, why do you think we're seeing what we're seeing so far?
Well, I think traditionally the answer would have to deal with the definitions that we talked about a little while ago, non-financial versus financial definitions of ESG. And I remember having conversations 20 years ago of, you know, a kid in the cubicle farm wants a socially responsible fund, but are we going to go through the trouble of putting it inside a retirement plan if it's going to be underutilized and we can't really track it because we can't compare it to everything? So I think that's changed. And we clearly, you know, we make no concessions for ESG. An ESG fund that's a large cap growth fund should be held to the same standard as every large cap growth fund. And that's what we're seeing play out in the marketplace. But I think more recently and probably more strongly is why we haven't had the implementation based on the growing demand, is what the activity from the Department of Labor around this topic. And this has gone on back and forth. And one thing everybody in our industry understands, Mike, is one does not want to run afoul of the Department of Labor in any way, shape, or form. So I think the Department of Labor activity has hindered some implementation.
I see. And to take another tack on this in terms of why the implementation has been slow, is part of it, or at least a degree of this, tied to maybe the a misconception that if it's ESG, if it's socially conscious, the participant, if investing in it, is giving up return in comparison to a non-ESG fund? Do you think there's a degree of impact from that standpoint that, hey, you know, we're going to give up some return, so why invest? Or is that true?
I think that 10 years ago or longer, or even a couple of years ago, I think that's true. I think there's a stigma attached to ESG funds because of what we talked about earlier, where we're going to put a fund in there that's socially responsible, and maybe it doesn't perform where it's supposed to, but we'll put an asterisk next to it and say, you know, it's socially responsible, so we're going to keep that in there anyways. So I think there's a long-held bias that to get ESG, you have to sacrifice performance. And the reality is that's just not true. If you look at the ACWI index, which is all country world index, has an ESG leaders component to it as well. And it shows that over the last 10 years, companies with high ESG scores have actually outperformed the broad market of the ACWI index. So I think that was an argument that was valid some time ago, but with this evolution, I think that argument has lost some of its significance.
Yeah, actually, that's good to hear. That's what I was hoping you were going to say, Bill. That's good. That's good. And on the investment side, you know, with a fund being screened and identified as ESG, is it basically focused on, you know, large cap companies or large cap funds, or not necessarily?
Not necessarily. Again, with this explosion of choices in the marketplace, we've come away from just a kind of an all cap social responsible company fund to funds really in every asset class that focus on ESG performers that aren't just large cap companies. They're small mid-cap companies, non-US companies, and even fixed income. There's been a significant increase in fixed income offerings with green bonds and other ESG securities inside the fixed income world.
And has ESG gone and penetrated the EFT area of the market as yet, or is it pretty much for the retail individual accessible ESG funds through mutual funds?
I think the ETF marketplace is growing. Right now, or at the end of last year, about 70% of assets in ESG are quote-unquote actively managed, where that's a portfolio manager that does fundamental research and select securities. There's been a big growth of passive management, where a company will benchmark to an index with ESG, higher rated ESG companies. So the passive sleeve is growing pretty dramatically, as it is in the mutual fund world in general, but we're seeing more and more offerings come to the passive space in the ESG world as well.
I see. And turning back to the Department of Labor, where do we stand currently with the DOL and ESG?
That is the million-dollar question. And I think you have to look back a little bit before we can figure out where we are. So the term that I hear repeatedly about the DOL on this topic, at least over the last 3 years, has been ping pong. And this started back in 2018, where there was a field bulletin issued. And really all that field bulletin said was fiduciaries, when selecting investments on behalf of other people, can only consider financial factors first. So that basically just reset one of the basic tenets of ERISA. Now, inside of that, there was a veiled threat to ESG, meaning you cannot consider these factors because they're not financially material. So that field bulletin in 2018 turned into, in 2020, what was called the ESG proposal. And again, it restated the same tenet of ERISA, but it mentioned the term or the initials ESG over 150 times in that proposed language. Now, that 2020 proposal, it became a rule in January, which is now called the pecuniary rule. Again, restated the same thing. And unlike the proposal, which mentioned ESG that many times, the pecuniary rule did not single out ESG at all. So that was issued in 2021, where the DOL said, essentially, you cannot consider factors that are not financially material when selecting investments for others. Now, shortly after the administration changed at the end of January, in February of 2021, some non-enforcement language is issued. And what that said is this new Department of Labor has no intention of enforcing the law that was made by the prior Department of Labor. So we're in a state of limbo for most of 2021. In October of 2021, the new DOL issued a proposal, and we expect the final rule to look very much like that proposal, which allows for consideration of ESG factors in investment selection for ERISA-governed plans. So what this really does, where we stand, the short answer to your question is this proposal, and we think the rule will be very similar, paves the way for plan sponsors and the advisors and consultants that do the work on their behalf to look seriously about implementation of ESG investments, provided that the ESG factors are financial in nature and that the primary objective of any investment is also financial in nature.
I'm chatting with Bill Slimbaugh of Natixis on ESG investing, and this is the Anderson Files on podclips.io. Bill, with the activity that you just described with the DOL, it sounds like, you know, with these rulings coming up and language and guidance from the regulators, I kind of see it as bringing ESG totally into the mainstream. It's not, you know, something in addition. It's not a sideshow, but something that really is just part of the investment evaluation process and working up effective, comprehensive investment menus for retirement plans. Do you see it that way as well?
I do. I think that at this moment in time, because of the demand in the marketplace and because of the investment industry's response to that demand with new product offerings, I think people should be very comfortable that ESG is part of the mainstream investing right now. And if you look at individual money or institutional money or money that's non-ERISA governed, people can be very comfortable in selecting whether it's values-based or financially factor-based investments that are out in the marketplace. So I agree with you. I think this is there'll be a time when ESG will be, I don't think mandated necessarily, but if it's not considered, it may be considered detrimental to the performance of the investment.
And for a final ruling from the DOL, any speculation on timeline?
Yes, there's a lot of speculation. We look every day. So the proposal came out in October. There was a 60-day comment period, which ended in the middle of December. And just incidentally, there were over 28,000 comment letters issued back to the Department of Labor, overwhelmingly in favor of this ruling. So we expect the final rule to come out at the end of the first quarter, sometime during the second quarter of 2022.
Very good. Very good. And in the meantime, you know, how should we think about ESG in the interim?
Again, I think it depends on the type of money you're talking about. For let's just put it in two buckets, non-ERISA money. So private wealth, institutional money, monies for not-for-profits and charities. Those types of individuals representing those institutions should feel comfortable about implementation right away. There's a tremendous amount of opportunity to find ESG investments in the marketplace and to meet that demand. The difference becomes with ERISA-governed plans, 401k plans, 403b plans, et cetera. I think we're in a bit of a holding period waiting for this final language to come through before people can truly feel comfortable about implementing ESG. But those conversations certainly can be had now because, as we've said, as long as ESG factors are material in nature and as long as the number one objective for any investment chosen is financial in nature, those can be implemented right away, whether it's ERISA money or non-ERISA money.
Bill, how can listeners reach you or Natixis to learn more?
And the best place would be our website, and I'll give you the address. It is im.natixis.com, and I'll spell that, imindigomary.natixis, N-A-T-I-X-I-S as in Sam.com.
Bill, thanks so much for all the information on ESG and the status as an investment for not only retirement plans, but for retail accounts, IRAs, taxable accounts, all this information really beneficial to our listeners, and hope to have you back in the future.
I love it, Mike. I appreciate being with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Daryl Wayne, engineer, Mark Allen, producer. I'm Mike Anderson, and this is the Anderson Files on podclips.io, powered by InfoGen Labs, Inc. Keep calm and keep listening.
You've been listening to The Anderson Files with Mike Anderson. Visit us at podclip.io and check on the financial box for more information on The Anderson Files.